and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline in today's paper is County Alters Vaccination Strategy by Benjamin Fisher. Health officials in Dubuque County have started to plan for the end of their point of distribution COVID-19 vaccination sites in favor of more mobile and pop-up clinics moving forward. The demand for appointments and walk-in time slots, as well as provider capacity, have led the Dubuque County COVID-19 Incident Management Team to reconsider its vaccine administration strategy. Quote, because we are seeing numbers decreasing in walk-ins to our POD area, we are going to continue looking at more of the vaccine providers going to events occurring in Dubuque County, unquote, said Patrice Lambert, Executive Director of the County Health Department. The presence at area events already started. Dubuque firefighters administered 14 vaccines Saturday at the Dubuque Farmers Market. The Visiting Nurses Association was at the former funeral home adjacent to Jackson Park on Monday. Hartig Drug administered vaccines at the Wednesday Farmers Market at the Dubuque County Fairgrounds. Unity Point Health Finley Hospital will set up shop at Food Truck Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday, May 14th, at Washington Square in Dubuque. Lambert told the County Board of Supervisors this week that these events have proven popular enough to encourage the team to shift its focus to bringing vaccines to the public. You don't have to come to us anymore, she said. We're coming to you. This move would include closing some of the county's semi-permanent vaccination sites, beginning with the drive-through clinic at Grand River Center in Dubuque. That has been operated mainly by Dubuque firefighters since opening in early April. Quote, we did have 400 to 500 people who did participate, Lambert said, but we are really being conscientious about cost and what does work and what doesn't work. We think going to where the people are right now is the most effective way. As of Wednesday, 44,665 Dubuque County residents were fully vaccinated against COVID-19, which equates to 57.6% of the county population over 16. That is a 3.7 percentage point increase over a week earlier, when 41,776 residents were fully vaccinated. County Supervisor Harley Potoff supported ending the lease at Grand River Center. Quote, I would like to see you get out of the contract at Grand River, if we're not using it, to try and cut some of the expenses there, unquote, he said. The city and county previously entered a memorandum of understanding to lease and operate the site through July, as well as establish a call line and purchase appointment scheduling software. The costs associated with the agreement totaled $65,000. The county's share of that amount was $47,000. County Supervisor Jay Wickham, therefore, wanted to hear from the city. They're the ones who came up with this request, he said. Assistant City Manager Corey Burbach told the Telegraph Herald that the joint lease with Grand River Center can be canceled at any time with 21 days' notice. After the supervisors gave their support to ending the lease this week, the city informed Grand River Center of its partner's intention to cancel. The lease's last day would be May 30th. That would save $15,000 based on what was budgeted for June and July, Burbach said. A vote on amending the agreement to cancel the lease will come before the supervisors at their Monday, May 17th meeting. Quote, in our memorandum of understanding, the county paid for the facility as well as traffic management, some signage, Burbach said, so all of that savings would go to the county, unquote. The vaccine call line staffed by the city fire department has seen great success and will remain open, Lambert said. The incident management team also is beginning to plan to eventually end its site at the former Yonkers Women's Store in Kennedy Mall. This would be further down the road, Lambert said. Right now, our providers continue to use Yonkers for their second dose boosters, she told supervisors. They still have large amounts of groups coming in for the months of May receiving their boosters, but we know that there are costs associated with that site, unquote. Depending on details of potential rollout of Pfizer vaccines for children 12 through 15 years old, the team is considering shifting to only hosting walk-in clinics on Fridays at the mall site during June, Lambert said. County Supervisor Ann McDonough applauded the team's shift in focus but said she still saw value in a permanent site for vaccines. Quote, we still need to take steps for there to be a permanent walk-in location that you can advertise in every address to make that formal announcement that you can always get a vaccine here, unquote, she said. A key piece of the incident management team's thinking also centers on county health providers' capacity to provide walk-in vaccinations at their own properties. Lambert said this week that some providers already are able to handle that demand internally. The next story is law enforcement honors its fallen. Nationally, 264 deaths are recorded, and COVID-19 is the most common cause. By Kaylee Reese. The sound of taps filled the air outside of Dubuque Law Enforcement Center as law enforcement personnel took time Wednesday to remember those who have died while serving in uniform. The memorial service was attended by about 35 members of the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department and the City of Dubuque officials. It was arranged by chaplains of the Police and Sheriff's Department as part of National Police Week. Quote, today we honor the brave men and women in law enforcement that paid the ultimate price, their lives, said Chaplain Todd Brewer, who also led a prayer during the service. Today and every day we honor them, we respect them, and we pay tribute to them and their families, unquote. An honor guard also presented and raised a flag outside the law enforcement center with those present in uniform saluting. During his remarks, Sheriff Joe Kennedy expressed the appreciation for the work of fellow law enforcement and the sacrifice required in the line of work. Quote, each time you leave your family, it might be the last time, unquote, he said. He also said he enjoyed being able to be together with both law enforcement departments and the chaplains again, as the group hasn't seen each other in person since the COVID-19 pandemic started. The annual service wasn't held last year for pandemic-related reasons. Kennedy and Police Chief Mark Dalsing noted that 2020 marked a high year nationally for law enforcement deaths. Between lives lost in the line of duty and those who died due to COVID-19-related causes. According to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, which tracks law enforcement deaths, 264 members of law enforcement died last year, while still serving their communities. COVID-19 was the most common cause. Law enforcement didn't shut down, Dalsing said of the COVID-19 challenges. Law enforcement didn't work from home. He noted that 2021 marks the 125th anniversary of the death of Albert Meisner, the first Dubuque police officer killed while still in his role. Since then, few Dubuque officers have died. For over a century, our department has been spared of losing a brother or sister, Dalsing said. In fact, Iowa rarely has to make a list. However, Dalsing spoke about this year already claiming too many law enforcement lives, including Iowa State Patrol Sergeant Jim Smith. He was fatally shot on April 9th during a standoff in Grundy Center. The alleged culprit, Michael Lang, who was also shot in this standoff, is charged with first-degree murder. Dalsing also mentioned the shooting death of Stockton, California police officer Jimmy Inn on Tuesday when Inn was responding to a domestic violence call. Inn was the second California officer to be fatally shot on duty in 24 hours. San Luis Obispo Detective Luca Bendetti was killed Monday. Dave Davis, president and CEO of Spahn and Rose Lumber Company, also spoke at the Dubuque service Wednesday to thank law enforcement for its efforts and sacrifice. While Davis said he didn't come from a law enforcement background, his military background helps him understand the role of law enforcement. We love the community and Iowa, and we appreciate the fact that you keep us safe and you keep us together, he told attendees. In addition to potentially dangerous work environments and COVID-19, Dalsing said departments across the country also have faced staffing challenges amid anti-police sentiment over the past year. However, he said those in law enforcement still feel drawn to serve their communities. "Law enforcement isn't a job," he said. "It's a calling." Kennedy echoed Dalsing's statements while thanking both local departments for their work. "I truly believe, regardless of what anyone says, that this is truly the greatest job in the world," he said. The next story is Coal Acres Swings Into Rebuilding by Jeff Montgomery. Dateline, Cuba City, Wisconsin. 3 days after a fire ravaged a Cuba City golf and supper club, the damaged remnants still rest in a scorched pile where the clubhouse once stood. The leaders at Coal Acres, 7617 County Road J, are wasting little time planning their next steps, however. Pro Shop manager Dan Bowden said the building will be demolished within a week and plans to construct a replacement already are underway. Quote, "This is the center of three communities," Bowden said. "We have had generations of people in Cuba City, Benton, and Hazel Green who grew up here, who raised their kids here. We want to get back to normal as quickly as we can. We want to do that for them," unquote. Benton fire crews were called to the scene of the blaze around 1 a.m. Sunday. They were joined by firefighters from five other departments, with emergency responders spending roughly 5 hours on the scene. Extensive fire damage destroyed the upper level of the building, while heat and smoke damage affected the lower one. Bowden said the insurance crews visited the site Tuesday and deemed the building a hazard. "They want it to come down as soon as possible, and it is scheduled to come down on Monday," he said. Bowden said Coal Acres already has begun working with engineering firms to design a new building, adding that officials hope to have the new structure ready for spring 2022. "The golf course already has reopened to members," Bowden said. "Shortly after the building is demolished, Coal Acres will begin using a portable pro shop that will allow staff to take tee times, process greens fees, and allow non-members to use the course. Plans for the swimming pool on the property are less clear, however." Bowden said the pumps for the pool were built into the foundation of the clubhouse, and that system will be removed when the rest of the building comes down. He said a new pumping system is not part of the plan for the soon-to-be-constructed clubhouse. "But that doesn't rule out the possibility that the pool could have a new chapter. We are looking into rebuilding at the clubhouse first," he said. "Next, we will look at the feasibility of building a new pump house if the funds and the support are there to do that." Benton Village President Gary McRae called the fire a terrible accident and said it will impact multiple communities until Coal Acres is fully up and running. He noted that many Benton residents use the pool for lessons or open swimming. "Benton makes an annual financial contribution to support the pool," he said. "The fact that it isn't open will have a pretty big impact on us, especially with kids' swimming lessons," he said. He said he is resigned to the fact that the pool cannot reopen this year, but expressed hope that the pool services will return in the future. "If it doesn't reopen, people would have to go to Shullsburg or Galena or Platteville," he said. "It is going to be a big loss for the community until they get it back up and running." Coal Acres employs about 20 workers, including full and part-time staff, Bowden said. He said the majority of those jobs, including those related to the pro shop and the golf course maintenance, would be unaffected by the fire. Staff members employed in the Coal Acres Supper Club will be affected, but will have the option to get hours in other roles, he said. Bowden noted that there has been a high level of interest and an outpouring of support from community members in the days since the fire took place. "I cannot even guess how many cars have driven past to take a look at what happened," he said. "And so many people have called and offered to help in whatever way they can. Calls to Cuba City officials were not returned Wednesday." Turning to page 2 and the COVID news, the headline is, "Two local COVID-19-related deaths recorded." The Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and vaccination. Wednesday's developments included: two additional COVID-19-related deaths were reported in the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area between 5 p.m. Tuesday and 5 p.m. Wednesday. One was in Delaware County, raising the county's death toll to 41, while the other was in Crawford County, where the death toll moved to 18. Five additional residents of Dubuque County were confirmed to have COVID-19 during the 24-hour span. As of Wednesday, 126,317 residents of the Telegraph Herald's 10-county coverage area had been fully vaccinated, or 51.9% of the area's population of those 16 and older. The state of Iowa provided new county-level hospitalization data Wednesday. It stated that, as of Tuesday, 5 residents of Dubuque County with COVID-19 were hospitalized, 3 more than on Monday. 2 such residents of Delaware County were hospitalized, an increase of 1. 2 such residents of Jones County were hospitalized, the same as reported Monday. 1 such resident of Clayton County was hospitalized, also the same as reported on Monday. No such residents in Jackson County were hospitalized as of Tuesday. Walk-in vaccination clinics are regularly scheduled in Dubuque County through Monday, May 17th. Today's clinic is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Kennedy Mall vaccination site. As of 5 p.m. Wednesday, Dubuque County had a 14-day positivity rate of 1.7%. Rates in other Iowa counties were Clayton County, 1.7%, Delaware County, 1.9%, Jackson County, 2.8%, and Jones County, 3.9%. Statewide, Iowa reported 377 additional residents with COVID-19 in the 24-hour period that ended at 5 p.m. Wednesday, increasing the state's total to 368,567. The state reported 5 additional related deaths, raising the total to 5,994. As of Wednesday, 1,229,761 people had been fully vaccinated in Iowa, or 49.3% of the state's residents who are at least 16 years old. In Wisconsin, a COVID-19 vaccination clinic will be held from 9 a.m. to noon today at Broski Center in Platteville. Appointments are not required, but people are encouraged to pre-register by calling 1-844-684-1064. A COVID-19 vaccination clinic will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Cobb, Wisconsin EMS, 404 Motel Street. No appointment is required. Wisconsin reported 558 additional confirmed COVID-19 cases Wednesday, increasing its total to 604,378. The state's death toll rose by 18, for a total of 6,935. As of Wednesday, 2,329,097 Wisconsin residents have been fully vaccinated, which is 49.9% of the state's residents who are at least 16. There were 1,795 new COVID-19 cases announced Wednesday in Illinois, for a state total of 1,359,748. The state reported 24 additional related deaths, increasing the toll to 22,285. Illinois also reported that 4,420,751 residents have been fully vaccinated as of Wednesday, or 51.9% of the state's population who are 16 and older. For NICC graduate, college degree marks proud step toward career goals. By Allie Hinga. Rogeria Ferguson Hewing credits college with helping her get her life on track. Since moving to Dubuque and starting classes at Northeast Iowa Community College in 2018, she bought her first vehicle, found a consistent home, and now is seeing more job opportunities open up. I knew that education was always something that I wanted, and I was determined and I was destined to do it, Ferguson Hewing said. She is among the graduates being honored at NICC's commencement ceremony on Friday, May 14th. While Ferguson Hewing faced some challenges on the road to earning her associate's degree, her drive to get an education sustained her throughout her coursework. "It opened up doors for better opportunities for my life," she said. Ferguson Hewing moved to Dubuque in 2018 to help care for her mother after a major surgery. Ferguson Hewing soon started taking classes at NICC, balancing that along with taking care of her mom, working two jobs, and being a single mom of three. Still, she was determined to get an education and become the first person in her family to graduate from college. "I went to sleep with school on my mind. I woke up with school on my mind," Ferguson Hewing said. And she said being in school helped motivate her to take such steps as buying a car to get to school and work, and at one point to work first and third shifts in addition to taking classes. "This was like that for 2.5 years, on top of being a full-time mommy to three kids, and now five kids," said Ferguson Hewing, who got married last year and gained two stepdaughters. Last year, she transitioned to being a full-time student to focus on school and being a mom. The employees at NICC were like a family to her throughout her time in college, bringing her a laptop when she needed one to take classes and delivering Halloween treats and a Christmas dinner for her family. Cindy Verta, director of NICC's TRIO Student Support Services, got to know Ferguson Hewing through her participation in the TRIO program. Verta said, "Ferguson Hewing is good about reaching out and advocating for herself." "She's always rolled with every single punch," Verta said. "She reached out every single time and was able to just bounce back continuously." Ferguson Hewing now is looking to further her education and take online classes to eventually earn a bachelor's degree and one day a master's degree in criminal justice. She would like to become a corrections or police officer or work in the court system. She said that as a Black woman, she wants to help make the criminal justice system more diverse locally. "All I've got to say is, I'm ready, Ferguson Hewing said. And now to the News in Brief column. Authorities. Platteville man filmed minor showering, possessed child porn. The dateline is Platteville, Wisconsin. A Platteville man faces 17 felony charges for allegedly possessing child pornography and filming a child in the shower. Josiah R. Creasy, 34, is charged in Lafayette County Circuit Court with 16 counts of possession of child pornography and one count of capturing an intimate representation. His next court hearing is set for 10 a.m. Friday, May 14th. According to court documents, a Lafayette County Sheriff's Department detective received a tip in February from the National Center for Missing and Endangered Children that 41 child porn photographs were downloaded in September and were connected with a phone number and email address belonging to Creasy. The downloads also were associated with an IP address belonging to a Darlington Township residence where Creasy previously lived. Authorities reported that he admitted searching for female child pornography using a virtual private network so that he would not be discovered and that getting caught was an accident. Authorities. Potentially deadly opioid showing up in local street drug purchases. Dubuque County authorities warned that a potentially deadly opioid is showing up in locally purchased street drugs. Sheriff Joe Kennedy said he was informed by the Dubuque Drug Task Force that fentanyl-containing pills are being sold as other illicit substances, such as ecstasy or other prescription drugs. He was told of two overdoses connected to the task force investigation. A press release notes that fentanyl, a highly dangerous narcotic analgesic, can cause an overdose or death, even in small amounts. If you or a loved one are addicted to street drugs, we urge you to use caution during this time, the release states. Kennedy said authorities have not yet been able to find who is selling the drugs, so they made the public announcement to warn residents before additional overdoses occur. Sergeant Gary Pape of the Dubuque Drug Task Force confirmed the ongoing investigation involving drugs being sold containing fentanyl, but declined to comment on any related overdoses. He said no drugs containing fentanyl have been obtained by authorities and that he could not provide further details on the investigation. Authorities recommend only purchasing pills from licensed pharmacists or reputable legal vendors. The release directs residents to visit samhsa.gov/find-help/national-helpline for help with drug addiction. One killed in motorcycle crash near Cascade. The dateline is Cascade, Iowa. A motorcyclist died in a single vehicle crash Wednesday near Cascade. The Iowa State Patrol is not releasing the motorcyclist's name at this time, but reported that he or she was 64 years old. The crash occurred at about 3:40 p.m. Wednesday on Iowa Highway 136 south of Cascade in Jones County. A press release states that the motorcyclist was driving south when, for an undetermined reason, the motorcycle left the roadway and crashed into the ditch. The crash remains under investigation. Excuse me. And then the last story is fire destroys mobile home in Clayton County, North Buena Vista, Iowa. A fire destroyed a vacant mobile home Tuesday night in Clayton County. Firefighters responded at about 7:45 p.m. to an unoccupied mobile home at 119 Clark Street in North Buena Vista, according to Robbie Eartham, an assistant chief of the Holy Cross North Buena Vista Fire Department. Eartham said there were no injuries. The trailer sustained about 50% heavy fire damage and the rest of the mobile home had smoke and water damage, Eartham said. The assessed value was $50,000. The mobile home was in the process of being sold, Eartham said. Firefighters were on the scene until 10 p.m. Fire departments from Farley, Sherrill, and Guttenberg provided mutual aid. At this time, we believe the cause of the fire was a faulty dehumidifier, Eartham said. In tri-state news, felon facing federal weapons charge for second time. A Dubuque felon accused of a September shooting now faces a federal weapons charge for a second time. Friday D. Gardner, 23, recently was charged in U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, with possession of a firearm by a felon. The charge relates to September 21st. State court documents said that on that day, Gardner and his cousin drove up to a vehicle driven by D'Angelo D. Washington, 22, in the 400 block of West 17th, and Gardner opened fire. Both vehicles then fled the scene. Washington's vehicle was found unoccupied with three bullet holes in it a short time later, but no injuries were reported. Meanwhile, Gardner's vehicle was located unoccupied in the 700 block of Kirkwood Street. It had gunshot damage, and its rear driver's side tire was flat. Six 40-caliber shell casings were found between the hood and the windshield on the driver's side, and one shell casing was located between the trunk lid and the rear windshield. It was unclear where the gunshot damage came from, as there was no mention of the vehicle being shot in court documents. The federal indictment states that Gardner possessed a handgun and ammunition on the day of the shooting. He initially was charged in the Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with intimidation, with a dangerous weapon, going armed with intent, reckless use of a firearm with property damage, and being a felon in possession of a firearm. Those charges were dismissed when the federal charge was filed. It is the second time that Gardner has been charged at the federal level with possession of a firearm by a felon. He was convicted of the offense in 2018. His other prior convictions mentioned in federal court documents were a pair of 2016 convictions in Cook County, Illinois, one for possession of a controlled substance and the other for escape. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, May 13th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Sheila Rose Rupp, Zwingle, Iowa. Sheila Rose Rupp, 60, of Zwingle, Iowa, passed away on May 11th, 2021, at the home after a courageous battle with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. She passed away with the love of her family by her side. Mass of Christian burial will be at 1 p.m. Friday, May 14th, 2021, at St. Raphael Cathedral with Father Thomas Ashman, SVD, officiating. Burial will be in Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 13th, 2021, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where a rosary and a closing prayer will be held at 2:45 p.m. Robert W. Engelman, Bellevue, Iowa. Robert W. Bob Engelman, 88, of Bellevue, passed away on Monday, May 10th, 2021, at his home, surrounded by his family. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 15th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Bellevue. Family will greet friends 9 to 10 a.m., also Saturday, May 15th, at the Hockmann-Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue prior to Mass. Burial with military honors conducted by Bellevue American Legion Post No. 273 will be in St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery in Bellevue. Funeral Mass will be live-streamed on the St. Joseph Bellevue Saints Peter and Paul Springbrook Facebook page, on their YouTube channel, and on Bellevue Cable TV Channel 37. Please utilize masks during the services at the funeral home and church, and respect social distancing due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Christy J. Beaver. Christy J. Beaver, age 52, of Dubuque, passed away on Saturday, May 8, 2021, at Unity Point Health, Finley Hospital. Love for her children and a strong work ethic inspired Christy's courageous battle with cancer until she passed away peacefully. To celebrate Christy's life, family and friends may visit from 3 p.m. until 7 p.m. on Friday, May 14th, at Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, where there will be a parish scripture service held at 6:30 p.m. Due to COVID-19 concerns, all who attend will be required to wear a face covering and are asked to please maintain social distancing practices. To honor Christy's life, funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, May 15th, at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Trinity Catholic Church, 1701 Romberg Avenue, with Reverend Stephen M. Garner. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Darlene Wagner Peters, East Dubuque, Illinois. Darlene Wagner Peters, 79, of East Dubuque, Illinois, passed away unexpectedly at 7:39 p.m. on Monday, May 10th, 2021, at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. There will be no public visitation. Graveside services will be at 1 p.m. on Friday, May 14th, at the East Dubuque Cemetery. The Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque is assisting the family. A memorial mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, May 21st, at St. Mary's Church in East Dubuque with Father Peter Sneeg officiating. Jim Kubitz. Jim Kubitz, 61, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, May 11, 2021, at his home in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. Friday, May 14, at Hoffman Schneider & Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. If you are not feeling well or are unable to attend, we encourage you to visit hskfhcares.com to send a message to Jim's family. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be made to the American Cancer Society. Condolences sent to the family by visiting Jim's obituary at hskfhcares.com. Gerald R. Foate. Gerald R. Foate, 80, of Dubuque and formerly of East Dubuque, Illinois, died on Tuesday, May 11, 2021. Arrangements are pending. Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque is assisting the family. Donald E. Brandle. Donald E. Brandle, 78, of Dubuque, died on Tuesday, May 11, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday, May 17, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, where services will be held at 10 a.m. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. Gerard E. Wedig, Belmont, Wisconsin. Gerard E. Wedig, 65, of Belmont, died on Monday, May 10, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, May 14, at Melby Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 15, at St. Philomena Catholic Church in Belmont. Stephen L. Meyer, Asbury, Iowa. Stephen L. Meyer, 61, of Asbury, died on Tuesday, May 11, 2021. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon Wednesday, May 19, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Funeral Services. Beverly J. Atkinson, Dubuque. Celebration of Life, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 15, at St. Peter Lutheran Church, Dubuque. Vernon C. Bogie, Dyersville, Iowa. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Francis Xavier Basilica, Dyersville. Patrick J. Dutmeyer, Manchester, Iowa. Services, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Mary Catholic Church, Manchester. Earl H. Edge, Benton, Wisconsin. Visitation 9 to 10:45 a.m. Friday, May 14th, St. Patrick's Church, Benton. Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Emerald A. Faulkner, Sr., Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Celebration of Life, 1 p.m. Sunday, May 16th, 545 Mill Street, Bloomington, Wisconsin. Sherry L. Flack, Hanover, Illinois. Celebration of Life, 3 to 6 p.m. Saturday, May 15th, 103 Franklin Street, Hanover. Mary Lou Haferbecker, Largo, Florida. Services, 10 a.m. today, Mount Calvary Cemetery, Dubuque. Thomas J. Herrig, Dubuque. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, May 14th, St. Donatus Church, St. Donatus. Services, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Faye E. Hoffman, Key West, Iowa. Visitation, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., Saturday, May 15th, St. Joseph Key West Church. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m., Saturday, at the church. Richard Ingalls, Manchester, Iowa. Visitation, 2 to 5 p.m., Saturday, May 15th, Leonard Muller Funeral Home, Manchester. Services, 5 p.m., Saturday, at the funeral home. Haley Ann Leffler, Platteville, Wisconsin. Visitation 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Friday, May 14th, Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville. Services 1 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Mary Alice Pedley, Schulzburg, Wisconsin. Visitation 3 to 8 p.m. today, Erickson Funeral Home, Schellsburg. Janine N. Steinley, Galena, Illinois. Visitation 9 to noon, Saturday, May 15th, St. Matthew Lutheran Church, Galena. Services noon Saturday at the church. Richard J. Tease, Sr., Dubuque. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. today, Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street. Services 10 a.m. Friday, May 14th, at the funeral home. Catherine Thompson, Dubuque. Visitation 10 to 11 a.m. Monday, May 17th, Church of the Resurrection, Dubuque. Memorial Mass, 11 a.m., Monday at the church. John W. Wheelu, Dubuque. Celebration of Life, 1 to 4 p.m. Saturday, May 17th, Eagle View Pavilion, Eagle Point Park, Dubuque. Now we'll turn to the sports page and the Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week. Heyer enjoys record-setting week on the track. We're talking about Haley Heyer of East Dubuque. She's a distance runner and off to a stellar start by Shannon Mum. In a span of just 1 week, East Dubuque sophomore Haley Heyer broke four school records. The Telegraph Herald Athlete of the Week broke and rebroke the school standards in the 3,200 and 1,600 meters for the Galena East Dubuque River Ridge track and field team. On Tuesday, May 4th, Heyer ran her first ever 3,200 race at Pecatonica, breaking the previous school record by 30 seconds with 11:21. 4 days later, she ran an 11:06, re-breaking her own record at an invite in Palatine, Illinois. Her time was also good enough to break the previous all-time Northwest Upstate Illini Conference record, which stood at 11:24. We were expecting her to break the school record at some point this season, but not in her first race, East Dubuque Galena River Ridge track coach Michael Ayers said. She's only been running competitively for a year, so it's exciting to watch her grow every meet. On Thursday, May 6th, Heyer broke the 1600 school record by running a 5:32. She ran a 5:30 on Tuesday night in Pecatonia to re-break her own record. I've been really happy with the PRs I've been getting so far this season, Heyer said. I feel like going out for cross country this year really benefited my training, especially for the 3200. Heyer, who usually plays volleyball in the fall, made the last minute decision to join the cross country team this season after the volleyball season was postponed due to COVID. Cross country was a sport I never thought I'd get to go out for because of volleyball, but I was happy for the opportunity to join the team this year, she said. The season ended up going a lot better than I anticipated. Heyer, who also swims during the winter months, runs the 800 and 4x00 relay during the track and field season. I've never had someone who runs as much as she does, Ayers said. She has extra high mileage, so much that we have to tell her to stop running some days. She's been amazing to watch, and I can't wait to see how she progresses the next couple of years. I don't think she understands yet just how good she is or has the potential to be. Heyer currently ranks third in Illinois Class 2A in the 3200. I love the sense of accomplishment I get after finishing the 3200, she said. I'm really glad I gave it a try this year. In girls prep golf, Hawkins out in front. Hempstead Sr. fires 76 to lead the pack city meet by Steve Ortman. Morgan Hawkins has qualified for the Iowa State golf meet twice in her terrific prep career at Dubuque Hempstead, but she's yet to win the Dubuque city meet. The Mustang standout senior has put herself in a position to check that one off her list. Hawkins hired a 76 and tops the leaderboard after the opening round on Wednesday at Dubuque Golf and Country Club, holding a 6-stroke lead over Dubuque Wallert's Ava Kalb. I played really well on the front, parred a lot of holes, and had one birdie and one bogey to even it out there, Hawkins said. That kind of saved me on the back, as I had a few blow-up holes on the back late. But all in all, I'll take it. While reaching the state tournament is the ultimate goal, there's still a sense of pride involved in being able to say you're the best prep golfer in the city. It's important because you're playing with a bunch of people that you've been playing with since you were younger, said Hawkins, who will continue her career at the University of Dubuque while also playing basketball for the Spartans. You want to play well, and it's all those courses that you're familiar with and play all the time. It's the pressure of doing well in the city. It gives you an outlet to prepare for the pressure of playing at conference and at regionals. Ava Kalb is right behind her with an 82, with WD's Hannah Fangman in third with 83, Wallard's Anna Kalb in fourth at 84, and Hempstead's Annika Newman fifth at 85. The final round will be held next Thursday at Thunder Hills Country Club in Peosta. I have to play well again and throw another low score out there, Hawkins said. We've played Thunder earlier this year, so we know what to look for and what to do and what not to do. Just throw another good score out there and hopefully play well. Ava and Anna Kalb, along with Caitlin Vassen, 87, and Julia Bush, 103, helped the Golden Eagles play to one of their best rounds of the spring. Wallard and Western Dubuque are tied atop the team standings at 356, with Hempstead right there at 358 and Dubuque's senior in fourth with 389. It was a beautiful day to play golf, and it was fun to get out there, Ava Kalb said. It was great to compete against rival Dubuque schools and see the competition. It feels really good to know that we have a chance. We had some really good scores today, and it's great to be tied with Western Dubuque. We played really well today and did a great job all around. Fangman led the Bobcats, who also counted scores from McKenna Stackus, 87, Hannah Klusner, 91, and Ella Klusner, 95. Behind Hawkins and Newman for the Mustangs were Emma Doherty, 98, and Ava Swenson at 99. The Rams were led by Kylie Felderman's 91, Sadie Richter and Megan Ludofisi added 96s, and Paige Lewis and Olivia Dushin chipped in 106s. In prep tennis, Wallard makes statement by Steve Ortman. Eagles win district title as Fair, Freiberger, Martineau, and Timp head to state, as does a Hempstead duo. Dubuque-Wallard left its competition in the dust on Wednesday during its Iowa Class 1A district tournament. The Golden Eagles cruised to a district championship at O'Connor Tennis Center, scoring 35 points to outpace runner-up Marion's 12 to receive a bye in sub-state competition in their quest to return to state as a unit. Individually, the Eagles flourished in a dominant display. Charlie Fair and Jack Freiberger rolled to the doubles championship, while freshman Rowan Martineau was businesslike in an impressive run to the singles crown, topping teammate Sam Timp in the finals. Fair and Freiberger in the doubles and Martineau and Timp in singles all advanced to the 1A state singles and doubles tournament in Waterloo on May 28th and 29th. I was really proud of how we came out really focused with lots of energy today, said Fair, the city singles champion this spring, who qualified for state in singles 2 years ago as a sophomore. We had the goal of being district champs as a team, and Jack and I really wanted to come in and win a district title. We all won emphatically, and to see Roan and Sam make it in singles as well, it was a really exciting day. Saturday, May 22nd in Waterloo against an opponent to be determined. The Eagles will play a sub-state final next Saturday, May 22nd in Waterloo against an opponent to be determined. The winner of that match will qualify for team state and immediately play its state quarterfinal the same day. The team state semifinals and finals would be held on June 1st. Co-coach Amy Walsh and I are so proud of these guys today, Wallard co-coach Eric Lucy said. We get to get first and second in singles and then first and third in doubles. Those guys made a statement that they want to get to team state, and it was phenomenal. Wallard's Rick Walker and Nolan Martineau placed third in doubles, making them alternates if another team were for some reason to be unable to make it to state. These guys made Wallert proud, Lucy said. They made their coaches proud, and most of all, they made Julie Westerkamp proud. Fair and Freiberger won their first two matches by 6-0 scores before another strong win in the finals. The duo set their sights on a district doubles title at the beginning of the season. Roan Martineau was possibly even more impressive in the singles bracket. He won his three matches by scores of 6-0, 6-0, 6-0, 6-1, and 6-0, 6-0 over Timp in the final. He's like a trained Navy SEAL, Lucy says. He just takes care of business and then quietly leaves the court. He's been like that all season. He didn't even give up a point in one of his sets today. He had a perfect set. Just a great performance. In a Class 2A district tournament in Bettendorf, Hempstead's Kareem Kassas and Jake Althaus punched their ticket to state doubles with a runner-up finish. The Mustang duo cruised in straight sets in their first two matches before battling with Linmar's Arwin Sivakumar and Sudeep Gad in the title match in a 6-2, 5-7, 6-3 loss. That was really the match of the day in the finals, Hempstead coach Andrew Roos said. It was such a great feeling watching that final point in the semifinals, knowing that their hard work the last couple of years has paid off. Multiple coaches commented on how well they're playing and how much they have improved. Hempstead finished second in the team standings, and Western Dubuque took third. The teams will meet in a preliminary sub-state match on Saturday at Roos Courts, with the winner advancing to the sub-state final on May 22nd in Iowa City. Dubuque Senior placed third in the team standings in a 2A district tournament in North Scott, and the Rams will play at Cedar Rapids Kennedy in a preliminary sub-state match on Saturday. Julian Nemers and Harry Tompkins finished third in doubles for Senior, making them state alternates. County Hall of Fame to induct 8 this summer by Jim Leitner. The Dubuque County Baseball Hall of Fame will add 6 players, 1 umpire, and 1 contributor during this 35th annual induction ceremonies this summer. The players include Dubuque's Mark Gassman, Farley's Scott Harris, Rickardsville's Phil Klein, Pleasant Grove's Jerry Baldy McDermott, and Cascade's Marty Sutherland and Pat Weber. Worthington's Daryl Tucker will be inducted as an umpire, and Dyersville's Donnie Ungs will be honored as a contributor. They will be honored during a Hall of Fame dinner program on Friday, July 9th at Happy's Place in Key West, Iowa. Gary Dolphin, the voice of the Hawkeyes, will MC the event, which begins with a social hour at 6 p.m., followed by the program at 7 p.m. The following evening, the Hall of Fame Telegraph Herald Semi-Pro All-Star Game between the Prairie League and the Eastern Iowa Hawkeye League will take place at Memorial Park in Worthington. The All-Star Game starts at 6:30 p.m., with representatives from Bernard and Key West serving as managers. Following the game, at approximately 8:30 p.m., the Hall of Fame induction ceremony will take place. In the event of rain, the All-Star Game and induction ceremony will be rescheduled for 5:30 p.m. on July 11th. Tickets for the dinner and program can be purchased from Hall of Fame committee members Gary Langle or Rich Knepper. Tickets cost $20 per person and will go on sale in June. Due to the pandemic, the Hall of Fame did not hold induction ceremonies for the All-Star Game last summer. EIHL semifinal set. The Eastern Iowa Hawkeye League will decide its preseason tournament champion this weekend at the newly renovated Farley Park. In Friday's semifinals, Farley meets Cascade at 7 p.m. and Key West plays Dyersville at approximately 8:30 p.m. The winners meet at 7 p.m. Saturday. Farley reached the semifinals and a 3-1 victory over Rickardsville on Saturday. Andy Seabrook tossed the three-hitter, and Maquoketa High School standout Cannon Coakley went 2-for-2 with a double to lead the Hawks. Cascade defeated the Dubuque Budweisers 7-4 to advance to the semifinals. Brock Simon went 3-for-3, Nolan Weber went 2-for-4, and Derek Lawrence homered in support of winning pitcher Brandon Houston. Key West edged EIHL newcomer Piasta 2-0 in the quarterfinals behind Kevin Hunley's stellar pitching outing. He scattered 5 hits, walked 1, and struck out 9 in 6 innings before Nick Wultkamp came on for the save. Carter Pesch singled in the winning run in the bottom of the 7th inning and also picked up the decision on the mound as Dyersville edged Worthington 2-1 in the quarterfinals. Pesch outdueled his former Beckman teammate, Josh Engler. Farley 9, Epworth 5 at Farley, Iowa. Tony Anstoter, Aaron Sogling, Aaron Wolfelkuhle, and Max Pins all had 2 hits, and Wolfelkuhle homered in support of winning pitcher Sogling on Wednesday night in the Prairie League. Rickardsville 6, Monticello 5 at Rickardsville, Iowa. Ryan Mabey went 3-for-3, and Ian Meyer and Drew Francois added 2 hits apiece for Rickardsville, which scored twice in the bottom of the 7th Tuesday night for the EIHL walk-off win. And finally, Cascade 5, Dyersville 4 at Dyersville, Iowa. The Reds picked up a key early season victory over rival Dyersville in EIHL play on Tuesday. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.